Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. I will be filling in and guest hosting for him. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest must-read stories you cannot find anywhere else. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I want to thank you for the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. And congratulations, buddy, on your latest blockbuster, Trickle Down Tyranny. To all of you out there, if you have not bought it, if you have not read it, I don't know what you're waiting for. You are missing an incredible treat. Go to michaelsavage.com or you can go to Amazon and order your own copy today. Members of the Savage Nation, I don't know how to say this, but he's back.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. America that's in the Bible for killing innocent people. America for treating our citizens as less than human.
Yep, Reverend Jeremiah Wright, America is back. The USKK of A, Jeremiah Wright, is back. There is now a new book by Ed Klein called The Amateur. And apparently Ed Klein interviewed Reverend Jeremiah Wright for his book. It was a 3.5-hour book. Sorry, a 3.5-hour interview in which Ed Klein, writing on Obama, doing a scathing biography of Obama, contacted Reverend Wright and said, hey, would you like to sit down and talk about the President of the United States and your relationship with him? To Ed Klein's surprise, Reverend Jeremiah Wright said yes. They sat down for 3.5 hours. It was a wide-ranging, extensive interview. And one of the most shocking developments, according to Ed Klein, is that Reverend Wright admitted that during the 2008 campaign, Obama's people reached out to him and offered him hush money. In particular, you want to see how corrupt the Obama team is. You want to see how the Chicago way works. According to Ed Klein, the president, or then Senator Obama, has a very close friend and golfing buddy by the name of Eric Whitaker. They go back to graduate school together. They met while playing pickup basketball. They have been lifelong friends. In fact, Eric Whitaker is Dr. Whitaker, and he works at the University of Chicago Medical Center, where, in fact, Michelle Obama worked and made a very lucrative salary along with Dr. Whitaker. And by the way, before I continue with this story, do you know who just recently got a $6 million federal grant from the Obama administration? You guessed it. Dr. Whitaker's University of Chicago Medical Center. One hand washes the other. But let me return to Ed Klein's narrative. Ed Klein says, that apparently the Obama campaign in 2008, when Reverend Wright and his hateful anti-American rhetoric, his racism, his black liberation theology, his anti-Semitism, his hardcore Marxism, when all of this was coming out, when all of this venom was coming out, they were in a panic. The Obama campaign rightly felt, had the American people really got to know Reverend Wright, the man who baptized Obama's children, married he and Michelle, the man that in his whose pews Obama sat for 20 years listening to his anti-Western, anti-white, anti-American vitriol, they may lose the campaign. So Obama sends his good friend Dr. Whitaker to offer Wright $150,000 if he will just keep quiet. Whitaker sends an email to a member of Wright's church saying, please, just shut up and you'll get $150,000. Wright says, no, I cannot and I will not be bought off. So Obama himself, according to Ed Klein, the biographer and author of Amateur, says Obama then walked over to meet Wright personally, begging him to keep quiet. Here is Ed Klein in his own words saying, the Obama campaign offered Wright $150,000 in hush money. Boys, roll clip six.
Chicago politics is one hand feeds the other, as you know. And Eric Whitaker, very close friend of the Obamas, sent an email to a member of the church saying that the Reverend Wright could get $150,000 if he would shut up and not criticize Obama anymore. Then, after the Reverend Wright said no thank you, Obama himself paid a personal call on the Reverend Wright. Just to put it in context, if you remember, Obama made a big speech saying, this is his famous race speech, which took place on the 18th of March. About 10 days later, he made the secret meeting with the Reverend Wright after he'd already denounced him.
If Ed Klein is right, and I have no reason to doubt him, this is a scandal of major proportions. Because what happened here, this may be normal in Chicago, but in the rest of America, this is not only wrong and unethical, it's illegal. If the campaign money, if the campaign team offered money to silence Reverend Wright, that's illegal. That's bribery and conspiracy to commit bribery. Then there should be an investigation. Congress should look into this. And in fact, what I would do if I was a Republican member of Congress is I would subpoena Reverend Jeremiah Wright. And I would say, you got to come up to Capitol Hill and testify under oath. Did the President of the United States or one of his agents offer you $150,000 for you to keep quiet and distance yourself from your association with Barack Hussein Obama? Because if the answer is yes, my friends, we have a major corruption scandal. We have an attempt now to buy somebody off. And so then the question has to become, why is Reverend Jeremiah Wright now, 4 years after coming into the spotlight in the spring of 2008, why is he now coming out and giving all of this information, spilling the beans, so to speak, to Ed Klein for his book? According to Ed Klein, and I also know this for a fact, because I've heard it from people close to Jeremiah Wright, Wright feels burned. Wright feels that he was thrown under the bus by Obama. That when Obama disowned him in the spring of 2008 to save his falling campaign, to limit the damage control, to limit the damage being done to him, Wright rightfully said, you were in my church for 20 years. I was like a second father to you. I baptized your children. I married you and Michelle. I was your spiritual advisor. And now when it's politically convenient, you just discard me like a used shirt? And I believe that it is this sense of injustice, this sense of personal retribution, this sense of having been neglected and humiliated by Obama that is now driving right to now speak out against the president. Here is Ed Klein in his own words. Boys, roll clip 7.
Reverend Wright is more than angry. He's absolutely fulminating. He feels that he's been thrown under the bus by a man whom he mentored for 23 or 24 years. You know, we, all of us, complain about the fact that Obama sat in that church and listened to that hate speech for 20 years. But what we don't realize is that even before he became a member of the church, he was very close to the Reverend Wright, who was like a second father to him and who was his spiritual advisor, his political advisor.
Bingo. Klein has it dead on. Wright was the spiritual embodiment of Obama. Wright was the one that indoctrinated Obama in the politics of anti-Western, anti-colonial socialism. That's where Obama cut his teeth. And then when it was politically expedient for the dear leader, he cut him off at the knees. And so my question to you is a very simple one. It's a three-barreled question. Do you believe that Obama and the Obama team committed an offense, a criminal offense, by offering Reverend Wright, according to Jed Klein, $150,000 in hush money? Should there be a congressional investigation? Two, why do you think Reverend Wright is talking now? What do you think are the motives for him to all of a sudden come out and release all of this damaging information? Why is he speaking now? And three, is this the tip of the iceberg? Think about it. If they're willing to bribe and pay off this man $150,000 for his silence, who else have they been paying off? Who else do you think they've been paying off to keep quiet and silent about all of the criminality and corruption that is rampant in this man and his regime? 1-800-449-8255. Why is Reverend Wright speaking now? I want to hear from you. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Wright is now coming out and saying that he was offered $150,000 by the Obama campaign in 2008 for his silence and to stay out of the public view. Why do you think Reverend Wright is speaking now? What do you think his motives are? And should a congressional investigation be launched? I want to hear from you. Rich in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeremiah Wright's message is a provocative message. It's a message of shock. It's a message to get attention. I think this is just another ploy to get a following and call attention to himself. If he feels spurned by the Obamas, all the better for him. It just opens the door for another volley.
Rich, let me ask you this. Do you think that Wright is lying about the $150,000 he was offered?
I don't know. I don't believe that they're above that.
I mean, I think they're certainly not above that. I know they've been offering money to members of Congress. If you remember Joe Sestak and the race against Arlen Specter, they basically offered him a cabinet position or a high-ranking government position not to challenge Arlen Specter in the Democratic primary. I mean, this is the Chicago way. I mean, you're talking about a man like Barack Obama, who was involved with Resco, who's been involved with sleazy, seedy Chicago politicians going back decades. I can certainly see him or one of his surrogates, Dr. Whitaker, saying, look, there's a lot of money around here in the Obama campaign. We can find $150,000 to sort of siphon that off and put into a secret slush fund to buy you off. I can certainly see that. And that's why I'd like to see a congressional investigation. I'd like to, for us to get to the bottom of this. Is Reverend Wright grandstanding? Is he just looking for attention and making outrageous claims? Or is he dead serious? Bring him up on Capitol Hill, subpoena him, have him testify under oath in front of the Government Reform Committee, let Congressman Daryl Issa head this baby up, and start subpoenaing people. And frankly, get Dr. Whitaker, get Obama's golfing buddy up there. Did you offer him $150,000? Were emails sent to members of Obama's church, as Ed Klein claims and as Reverend Wright claims? We can track down those emails. And if you can prove it, my friends, you have the mother of all corruption scandals. You want to talk about pay to play. You want to talk about hush money. You want to talk about bribery. You want to talk about corruption. They're trying to buy a guy off. They're trying to buy off his silence. This breaks campaign laws. This breaks bribery laws. This is, this is a scandal from A to Z. Conspiracy to commit bribery. People could end up in jail. This reaches all the way potentially to the White House. Where are the Republicans? Where is John Boehner? Where is Mitt Romney? 1-800-449-8255. Why do you think Reverend Wright is talking? We'll be right back after this break. Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage.
Savage.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. America that's in the Bible for killing innocent people. America for treating our citizens as less than human.
He's back. There's Reverend Jeremiah Wright, and now he's talking. And he's telling Ed Klein he was offered $150,000 by the Obama campaign to keep quiet. Do you believe him? Why do you think he's talking now? Why has he broken his silence? 1-800-449-8255. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. What many people don't realize is, yes, Reverend Wright is a radical Marxist. Yes, he's a vitriolic anti-American leftist. He's also a vicious anti-Semite. He believes the Jews run the world, and in particular, the Jews run America. And so he was asked a while back, after Obama was sworn in as president, have you spoken to the dear leader? Have you spoken to your former protege? Listen to his answer. Boys, roll the clip.
Reverend Wright told me on tape that Obama came to him and said, I need some spiritual advice. I don't know exactly who I am. And the Reverend Wright said, and this is on tape, well, we know your Islam background and you have that, but what you need now is some coaching on Christianity. And I asked the Reverend Wright, did you convert him from being a Muslim to a Christian? And he said, well, I don't know if I could go that far, but I can tell you that I made it comfortable for him to accept Christianity without having to renounce his Islamic background.
That was a clip I wanted to play a little bit later, which is obviously now Wright is admitting what I have been arguing and what Michael Savage has been arguing for years, which is that Obama has a Muslim background and that he has been concealing this from the American public, and that, in fact, Reverend Wright gave him the cover to pretend that he's a Christian when, in fact, in many ways, he's not. And he never was a Christian. But the real clip I wanted to play for this one is clip 26. Boys, roll it.
Have you spoken with him since he's been in the White House?
You ain't let him talk to me.
Right.
I told my baby daughter, I said, he'll talk to me 5 years from now when he's lamed up, or 8 years when he's had it off.
Well,
he can't, remember?
If you had anything to say to him, what would you say to him?
Same thing I've said to him all along. Don't let being in politics change who you are as a person. And you're letting these policies and the people around you change what you believe is the core and fiber of your being. Once you start compromising your beliefs, you become a puppet of a political machine. You're no longer yourself.
It's windy. You can't hear some of the audio. But in particular, I don't know if you caught it. Let me say it. Let me repeat what he said. Quote, them Jews ain't going to let him talk to me. Have you spoken to the president? No. Them Jews ain't going to let them talk to me. So in other words, there's a Jewish cabal, a Jewish conspiracy, Jewish advisors surrounding Obama, and somehow they're so afraid of Reverend Wright that they will not allow Obama to speak to his former reverend, to his former spiritual advisor. And I could go on and on with clip after clip after clip of him demonizing Israel, demonizing the Jews, praising Palestinians, praising radical Islamists, justifying the murder of Jews. This is the kind of man that Reverend Wright is. He is a hater, an America hater, and a Jew hater. And now he's coming out of the closet about his dealings with Obama. And I want to know what you think. 1-800-449-8255. Barry in West Virginia, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jack, I have kind of a different take on that. By the way, I've been a long-time Michael Savage listener, first-time caller. Going back to Jeremiah's background and his age and when he grew up, I'm pretty sure that he has experienced a lot of prejudice. He's been discriminated against, although, you know, thank God most of that's changed. And I'm sure part of that background is now coming out in hate. And I'm sure part of what he was expecting from his Barack is a lifting up of the black people to make their life a little better. And I think he's been gravely disappointed in that. And that's more adds more to his anger. I mean, the blacks have
a high Barry, point. That's a very good point. You know, you make a very interesting and a very good point. I've been saying this now for the last about 2.5 years. I do a lot of talk radio, and I can't tell you how many times I get African-American callers who call me up and say I'm racist because I criticize Obama. Well, they didn't say I was racist when I criticized Bush. They didn't say I was racist when I criticized John Kerry or when I was criticizing Al Gore or when I criticized Bill Clinton. But all of a sudden now, because I don't like Obama's socialist policies, I'm a racist. Okay, but let that go. What I always say to them is this. Forget how he's failed America. What has he done for blacks? In particular, every African-American takes pride in the fact that he's the first African-American president. Fine. What has he specifically done for the African-American community? Unemployment up. Joblessness up. Home foreclosures up. Inflation up. Gas prices up. Food prices up. It's been a disaster. Crime up. The black community has been decimated by the policies of this man. And what nobody will mention is, yes, the unemployment rate is 8%. It's really 15, 16, 17%. They're cooking the books, but let that go. In the African American community, it's much higher. And among the African-American youth, especially black youth, black teenagers, black young adults, it's 40 to 45%. These are Zimbabwe statistics. Now, if this was any other president, in fact, the Congressional Black Caucus themselves, they even said it. We are patient because he's a black man. He's a black president. How badly the African-American community has suffered under this man. So maybe part of this is just, frankly, Jeremiah Wright saying, listen, I carried you for 20 plus years. I indoctrinated you in socialism. I told you to lift up the black man, to put down the whites. And you're putting everybody down, including African-Americans. And you know what? I'm going to tell on you. I'm going to rat on you and tell everybody what a fraud and con man you are. That's a very interesting theory, Barry. Steve in New York, thanks for holding. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, it's my my pleasure. Let me tell you something. It takes a lot for me to be speechless, and I've been pretty much speechless over the course of the duration of this broadcast that you've been indicating about Jeremiah Wright and Barack Obama. Look, I'm not surprised. This is the Dodge City of politics out there in the great state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago. We have an infamous, sinister history there. It's Al Capone's home turf. It doesn't surprise me, but there is something that doesn't add up to me. Jeremiah Wright coming out and making these statements, and I wasn't aware until the call screener had indicated that these, I believe, were recorded, because my first instinct is he's ultimately going to say, I never said such a thing, and that was going to be able to create a topic in which every person who is an anti-Obama person, based upon his policies, would then have been wasting large measure in an ultimately flat case. But when he indicated that it was recorded, it is telling me something still doesn't add up. Blood is thicker than politics. Of course, the president has not only thrown Jeremiah Wright under the bus, as you alluded to a moment ago. He's abandoned the entire black community. We know that. We see it every day. But something tells me that something isn't right with this story. Sure, the money was probably offered, but there is a very, very simple way that at the end of the day they can throw a couple of other guys under the bus. The president had no knowledge. How dare anybody in his administration? Why wasn't I notified further? The mainstream media will run with that story as fast as possible. So, listen, I was one of the people who was mesmerized by his dazzling elocution some 4 years ago. I would never vote for him again, even if he was the only one on the ticket. I just wouldn't go.
No, Steve, look, I got to tell you, when I first heard of this story, I had to reread it. I had to look at it again. I said, look, here's this guy's mentor, his spiritual advisor, his political advisor. Why would he turn on him? But the more I look into this, have you noticed everybody who gets in bed with Obama, everybody who's an ally of Obama, eventually gets burned? Everybody gets burned. Nobody is safe with this guy. And I think what's starting to dawn on a lot of people is he will betray you at the top of a hat, at the drop of a hat. Now, look, let me just show you what kind of a man Obama is. And I think this says it all. I looked into Obama's background. I was one of the few journalists in Washington in 2008. I looked into the Reverend Wright connection. I looked into his communist affiliations. I tracked down the Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers connection. But more than that, I looked into his years in Indonesia. I looked at his stepfather. I looked at his father. I looked at his upbringing. He was raised in a Muslim home. He went to a Muslim religious school. By his own admission, he read the Quran multiple times and to this day can recite sections of the Quran in perfect Arabic. In fact, he gave an interview to the New York Times where he explicitly said, the most beautiful sound I have ever heard is, quote, the call of the azan, the call to prayer at night. He goes to the Muslim world and extends his hand. If you look at his presidency, what has been the constant in his presidency? He backs the Arab street. The Islamists in Libya, he bombs Gaddafi to get them in power. The Muslim Brotherhood, he backs them to come in power in Egypt. Everywhere you go, he supports the rise of radical Islam. In country after country after country, he sides against Israel, in favor of the Palestinians. And now Reverend Wright comes out and says, in a tape, remember, this is all tape, 3.5 hours. He can't disown this. Ed Klein has the transcript and the tape. It was 3.5 hours. He came to me with a Muslim background, and I had to transition him to Christianity, because everybody knows you can't make it to national political office if you're a Muslim. That's just a fact. So here is what Ed Klein says Jeremiah Wright told him. Boys, roll the clip again.
Reverend Wright told me on tape that Obama came to him and said, I need some spiritual advice. I don't know exactly who I am. And the Reverend Wright said, and this is on tape, well, we know your Islam background and you have that, but what you need now is some coaching on Christianity. And I asked the Reverend Wright, did you convert him from being a Muslim to a Christian? And he said, well, I don't know if I could go that far, but I can tell you that I made it comfortable for him to accept Christianity without having to renounce his Islamic background.
Bingo. In other words, he's still a cultural Muslim at heart. He's never abandoned his Islamic background. That's what I have been saying for years. And that's what Dr. Savage has been saying for years. So, this raises a lot of questions. First of all, under Islam, apostates are basically renounced. Their lives are threatened. If you abandon Islam to become a Christian, that is a penalty upon death. There could be a fatwa issued. That's number one. Number two, he has never come clean about his Muslim background. Now you have Reverend Jeremiah Wright saying, no. I'm telling you, he came to me as a Muslim. Now, I'm not saying I completely converted him. I'm not going to go that far. But basically, I helped guide him as he tried to embrace certain Christian principles and become a member of my church. My friends, we have a closet Muslim in the White House. And his actions from Egypt to Libya to Iraq to Afghanistan to every sector of the Muslim world shows that his sympathy lies with the Muslim street and not with the United States of America. This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Jeff Cooner sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. James in Sacramento, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to say that I'm not sure any of this matters to Obama's base. I think President Obama and 80% of his base would continue to vote for him. I think that all this matters is that swing group of independents, and maybe there are enough of them that will pay enough attention to this that it might make a bit of difference. But I don't think this is, to me it's devastating, but I don't think to his supporters that follow him no matter what he does, and many of the previous callers and you yourself made the point that he hasn't done anything for the black community. He's trashed this nation for everyone. And he has, I'll bet you, at least 70 to 80% of the same people that voted for him before that will vote for him again.
No, James, I think you're right. I think you're definitely right. I think he has a core constituency. It's 40 to 42%. It's never going to go underneath that. That are going to come out and vote for him. They could put Mickey Mouse, literally, Mickey Mouse at the ticket, at the top of the ticket. And you have people that are dependent upon government handouts, that are dependent upon the welfare state, that are dependent upon unemployment checks and food stamps and all these other government goodies. and they will vote for whoever is at the top of the Democratic ticket. And they will vote for him no matter what. I think, to me, the bigger issue is this. Those moderates, those independent voters out there who don't like some of Obama's policies, but they always say they like him personally, they like his wife, they like his family, they like his children. What is their reaction to this? Here you have the man's former pastor on the record, on tape, saying he was approached not just by Eric Whitaker. Remember, this is a key point. It's not just by Obama's agent and ally. He was approached, he said, by then the president himself, well, then the candidate Obama. When Whitaker's offer was declined, Wright comes out and says, then Obama paid me a personal visit and asked me and said, look, I need you to be quiet. I need you to get out of the limelight. Now I'm going to put, here's I'll put $150,000 on the table. And that'll see, financially, you'll be very nicely set up. But I need you to start keeping quiet. You have to hush up. Now, to me, that's a bombshell of a story. So, two people are lying. Either Obama, you know, someone's got to be lying. There are two people here. Either Obama did not offer him $150,000, did not have a private conversation with him after the Whitaker offer was rejected, or Reverend Wright is lying. To me, there's one way to settle it. Put him up on Capitol Hill, subpoena him, have him go under oath, on oath, and then say, under oath, is this true, yes or no? And then, my friends, we'll get to the bottom of this. And I think many Americans are not going to like what they see and what they find. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage. Michael is off tonight. I am filling in for him. Go to michaelsavage.com for the absolute latest stories, some of the best stories you cannot find anywhere else. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, thank you once again for the wonderful honor and opportunity of filling in for you tonight. I can't tell you how much I enjoy it and what a true privilege it is. If you go to the top story at michaelsavage.com, literally on the right-hand corner, I think it's one of the most important stories of our time. And the liberal media doesn't want to focus on it. The Democrats don't want to focus on it. Many journalists here in Washington don't want to touch it. But I think it goes to the heart and soul of who Obama is and the nature of his crony regime. Obama recently had to file financial disclosure forms. According to the USA Today, story is right there, linked to on michaelsavage.com. Obama is now worth at least as much as $10 million. Here is a community organizer who came into office with not much money, basically a senator's salary, and now over the last 3.5 years has amassed at least $10 million. He is loaded. He's rich. Now, you keep hearing from the Democrats and their liberal hacks in the media about Mitt Romney's wealth being a problem. That because Mitt Romney made a fortune at Bain Capital, the fact that he's worth north of $200 million, the fact that Mitt Romney's a rich, successful businessman, that, quote, he's disconnected. That he somehow doesn't understand the needs and aspirations of ordinary Americans. But what they don't tell you is that Barack Obama, he's not some poor schmuck. He's not some working class stiff trying to make ends meet and pay the bills every month. He's a rich man. Now, he's not the super rich, but he's definitely part of the 1%. He's worth $10 million. Much of it has come from the royalties of his books, his autobiographies. He's also made a lot of investments. And you keep hearing about the fact that J.P. Morgan Chase, the big bank, lost $2 billion making bad bets, making bad trades. And that somehow this is outrageous. That somehow we need more financial regulations. We have to rein in J.P. Morgan Chase. My argument is the exact opposite. They lost $2 billion. They made a bad bet. Let them swallow their money. Let them swallow their losses. People make bad bets. Yet while Obama excoriates the banks, while he excoriates Wall Street, while he excoriates the so-called 1% wealthy, he's one of them. Most of his top campaign donors come from Wall Street. J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs. I can run down the whole list. He's in bed with every single one of them. In fact, much of the bailouts went to bail out his cronies and friends on Wall Street. He goes on about the rich having to pay their fair share in taxes, raise the taxes, soak the rich, raise their taxes. Mr. President, you're railing against yourself. You want to pay more in taxes? Pony up a check. Who's stopping you? Same thing with Warren Buffett and every one of these liberal shysters. You want to keep paying more? Pay. Pull out your checkbook. Who's stopping you? But you don't want to do that because you shelter your money. You hide your money. One hand washes the other. And so you find out in michaelsavage.com, just click on that story, Obama has nearly $1 million in J.P. Morgan Chase. It's like a cabal. They're all in it together. That's why the rich keep getting richer. The fat keep getting fatter, living off the fat of the land. I was having a conversation with the show's executive producer, Beowulf, just a couple hours ago. And I said, Beowulf, you don't understand what it's like here in Washington. When you're a genuine independent conservative who stands above both parties, on solid, eternal principles of God, country, and family, nationalism, patriotism, populism, you are disgusted at what you see happening. Because what you see happening is a massive fraud and hoax being perpetrated upon the American people. They all leave, all of these politicians, the majority of them, leave richer than when they came in. Significantly richer. They're all end up being lobbyists, working on K Street, sitting on corporate boards, doing nothing, meeting two or three times a year, and making millions of dollars because they're selling access. It's influence peddling. So you have the Republicans on the one hand, who claim to be the party of the middle class, of middle America, of the little guy, yet they're doling out corporate welfare like there's no tomorrow, protecting their buddies on Wall Street. They're hypocrites. And you have the Democrats led by the con man in chief, Barack Hussein Obama, going on demonizing the wealthy, demonizing the rich, demonizing the banks, demonizing Wall Street, while he's taking money from them. His top campaign bundlers from Wall Street. Most of the people he's bailed out from Wall Street. Most of the people in his administration, like the tax cheat Tim Geithner, straight from Goldman Sachs. Many Democrats come in railing against the rich, and they all end up leaving being high-powered K Street lobbyists. Or look at John Corzine, the former governor of New Jersey, making money hand over fist, working on Wall Street. The hypocrisy is unbelievable. So when Obama rails against the rich, he's railing against himself. Mr. President, if the top 1% of this country are the problem, you're the problem. You're part of the problem. You're part of the 1%. You're worth $10 million. But unlike Mitt Romney, and this is the key point, how many companies did you turn around? How much private investment and wealth did you generate? How many jobs did you create? You are essentially leveraging your influence and power in Washington for personal gain. That's why people buy your books. People don't buy Barack Obama's books because he's the second coming of Ernest Hemingway or F. Scott Fitzgerald. He's not George Orwell. He's not some brilliant literary writer. Oh, you have to read Barack Hussein Obama. You have to read those autobiographies. They'll change the way you look at the world. No. You read them to try to understand who this man is and how destructive and dangerous his policies are going to be. He is going to leave Washington a very, very, very wealthy man. And this is the problem with America, is we have two political parties who come into this city and all they think about is how much they can take, how much they can plunder, how they can appease their lobbyist friends who then promise them lucrative consulting contracts and jobs and payoffs when they leave. They're like a gang of thieves. And you, the American people, are the victim. So now, here you have Barack Hussein Obama, as the country is literally going to hell in a handbasket. We're now record deficits, record debt. Latest unemployment figures now coming out, showing the economy is now stalling and slowing down. The Eurozone is literally cracking up right in front of our eyes. Greece, bankrupt. Today, there's a run on the banks. There's no more money going to Greek banks. Portugal, on the verge of falling apart. Spain, on the verge of falling apart. Italy, on the verge of falling apart. France, on the verge of falling apart. Europe is now in a Great Depression. And it's going to reverberate all over the world. And yet, what does the dear leader do? When in trouble, when there's crisis, you go on The View. You talk to four or five bimbos about popular culture and what you like to eat and how you like to dress, and they just giggle and laugh and praise the president, almost kneeling at his feet, telling him how great he is with the halo on his head. So here is Barbara Walters, the doyen of liberal journalism, saying, you know, Mr. President, people think that Mitt Romney is too wealthy. Do you think that makes him out of touch? Boys, roll the clip.
There are some critics who say that Mr. Romney is a rich man who is out of touch. Is that accurate?
Yeah, you know, my sense is he loves his family. I think he's been very successful, and we should applaud success in this country. But he has a different vision about how to move the country forward.
You're not a rich man, Mr. President. What, he's rich and you're not? The hypocrisy is mind-numbing. And so my question to you is a simple one. Do you believe that people who are wealthy do not have the best interests of Americans at heart? Is there a double standard at play here? Why is it wrong for Mitt Romney to be wealthy, but it's okay for Barack Hussein Obama? I want to hear from you. Is Obama's wealth a problem for you? 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Gary in the great state of Wisconsin, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, Jeff, thanks for taking my call. I just
my pleasure, Gary.
Mention something to the listeners. Barack Obama came in, and he's president for 3.5 years now, and he didn't have no money when he came in. In 3.5 years, he's worth $10, $11 million, give or take. Mitt Romney did this over the course of his entire life, fairly, I believe. I think people should find out where Barack Obama got that much money, because we know the president gets paid maybe $700,000 a year, give or take.
Oh, it's much. No, Gary, it's much less than that. No, look, I'll tell you right now, you're completely right. Romney worked in the private sector his entire life. Now, look, his father was a wealthy man. He had an inheritance, but he rejected that inheritance. He didn't take it. He started from scratch. He wanted to get into the hedge fund business, and he pulled himself up by the bootstraps and made himself a fortune. God bless him. But Obama has never run a lemonade stand. Never mind run a business. Never mind meet a payroll. So he doesn't understand how the economy works. He doesn't understand how business works. Calvin Coolidge once said, the business of America is business. This is why we became the most powerful, prosperous, wealthy country in the world. Under Obama, the business of America is government. The business of America is him and expanding his power. And that's why, like a typical Soviet apparatchik, you come into power, you pillage, you plunder, you use leverage and access to enrich yourself, and you leave a very wealthy man. Today, it is very lucrative to get into government. Look, I don't want to beat this like a dead horse, but there's a recent survey that just came out. Public sector workers, government workers, make infinitely more than private sector workers. Many of them easily make over $100,000 a year, plus benefits, plus 4 weeks paid vacation, plus I'm talking top dental, top health care, top eye care. I mean, top of the line for your whole family. Now, you tell me, why do people who are pushing paper all day, who are essentially leeches and parasites, why do they get to make twice as much as some schmuck who's working in some steel factory, breaking his back, producing a good product? Or some guy working out in construction all day in the hot sun, building homes, making things of value. This is what's slowly destroying this country. So, and then you have a guy like Obama, shamelessly, crassly, hypocritically, running around demonizing the rich. He is the rich. I don't have $10 million. Most Americans don't have $10 million. Everything I have in my life, I've earned it honest. I didn't lie my way to the White House. I didn't bribe people left, right, and center. I didn't present myself as some big phony and then get elected. And the moment I get elected, I start cashing in. I mean, this to me is what's wrong with America today. We have become a giant bordello. That's Washington. Everybody is for sale. It's time to get the pimps out of Washington. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. Joel in Pittsburgh, PA, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, I'm calling about the Reverend Wright thing.
Go ahead, shoot.
You were talking about has everybody scratching their heads. And actually, the money thing actually can play into this equation, too, Barack Obama's money. But what I believe is this is Hillary making her move. This has the Clintons written all over it. I don't know if you saw the article in the Washington Post the other day. Of all places, the Washington Post had a scathing article of Barack Obama that could have been written by you or Michael Savage. And you would never see that. And I believe that they smell blood. Barack Obama almost lost to a convict in West Virginia in the primary, a Democrat primary. And I smell a rat. I smell Hillary making her move. She smells blood. She's not going to wait 4 more years. She knows she can win it now. And the Democrats know that Barack Obama can't win.
You make excellent points, and you have no idea just how profound some of your points are. They're absolutely excellent. Look, I talk to a lot of Democratic operatives on Capitol Hill. I talk to a lot of people close to the White House. Let me tell you what Democrats are telling me in private. They are in full panic mode. They see not only the election slipping away from them, they see their hold on this entire regime in Washington crashing down. They're going to lose seats in the Senate. The Republicans are going to consolidate their majority in the House, probably take over the Senate. There's going to be a landslide against Obama in November. They are staring at a political tsunami. And so the question is, what are they going to do? Now, Bill Clinton in private begged Hillary to run against Obama in a Democratic primary in 2012. He felt that she could beat him, that the party regulars and the party power brokers would rally to her side to save them from this impending doom and disaster. She didn't. And the reason why she didn't is this. She is calculating, and in fact, I know this for a fact. I have to be careful how I couch this. 3.5 years ago, after Obama was inaugurated, remember, he's now in power. Hillary's been defeated. And she's been offered the position of Secretary of State. A key person, very, very, very close to Hillary, had a conversation with me. And that person told me that both Hillary and Bill are convinced Obama is going to be a one-term disaster. And so what they're going to do is they are going to wait for Obama to essentially commit political hara-kiri. And then they will be there to pick up the pieces and rebuild the Democratic Party. What Hillary really wants is she's looking at 2016. She sees the Democratic Party going down in flames, and then she will be there to completely pick up the pieces, rebuild the party, and then her and Bill Clinton will literally be the king and queen of the Democrats. They will smash the Obama regime, smash the Obama machine, purge them from the party, and then take back what they feel was stolen from them in 2008. So the big money in Washington is no longer saying, will Obama win? They know he's heading for a catastrophic landslide. So now the only question is this: how bad will the defeat in November be? Because I'm telling you, this is going to be the summer of Obama's discontent. This is just the beginning. Take the same-sex marriage issue. He just kissed away North Carolina with that. They were neck and neck 2 weeks ago. Obama and Romney were neck and neck in North Carolina. And then he comes out and supports same-sex marriage, gay marriage, thumbing his nose at middle America, thumbing his nose at Christian America, thumbing his nose at key swing states like Virginia, like North Carolina, like Wisconsin, like Ohio. North Carolina passes what's called Amendment 1. Their amendment basically defining marriage, as it's been for thousands of years, between a man and a woman. Now, what you don't hear from the mainstream media
is it was black pastors, black churches. They led the fight to keep the definition of marriage between one man and one woman. They don't like homosexual marriage. They can't stand gay marriage. He's splintering his own base. That's how inept and incompetent he is. North Carolina today, latest polls, Romney 51, Obama 43. So you are now seeing an impending disaster, a political disaster, unfold right in front of our very eyes for Obama. What's next? Obamacare is going to come up in the Supreme Court. They're going to rule on it probably in June. I think it's going to go down in flames. The Arizona immigration law. They're going to rule in favor of Jan Brewer in Arizona and against Eric Holder in the Justice Department. It's going to be one disaster after another throughout the summer. And what are the American people going to conclude? They're already concluding it. But by the end of this summer, I'm telling you, 60% of the American people are going to say, this man is out of his league, out of his depth. How in the world did we ever elect this man in the first place? Why didn't the media vet him? That's the question they're going to ask. And that's why, you heard it here on the Savage Nation, I'm telling you, take this to the bank. The mainstream media, you think they were in the tank for Obama in 2008? I know these people. I have to go to cocktail parties with these people. I have lunch with these people. They're going to be even doubly more in the tank for him. Because they know when Obama goes down in 2012, it's not just him and his regime that comes crashing down. It's the credibility of the liberal media. Because what you're seeing now with Reverend Wright being offered $150,000 to basically silence him, that is the tip of the iceberg. Fast and Furious, all these green energy boondoggles, every corruption and crime that has taken place under this administration, it is all going to come out. The deliberate policy to foment racial division, all of this is going to come out, and then some. And the liberal media covered it up. For 4 years, they have been covering up for this man. And that's why, come November, my friends, it is not just an election. It's a reckoning. Lamar in New York, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Governor Romney's source of wealth is not transparent to us. His family connection, introductions, mentoring, and guidance all have contributed to his success. And for one thing, the hedge fund private equity business community is very close to outsiders. And Wall Street is still about pedigree and where one comes from and what their education affiliation is. And one thing...
Okay. I think Lamar's point is that there's some kind of incestuous or insidious relationship between Romney, Bain Capital, and talk radio. Look, I've heard these conspiracy theories before. What I can just tell you is this. Bain Capital, from all of my investigation and all of my research, is one of the most respected hedge funds. They have a generally very good success rate. They've had some failures, but they've turned around a lot of good companies. Staples is one of them. Almost 100,000 jobs were created right there. But the bigger issue is this. Obama, some of his top bundlers are hedge funds. So he's demonizing private equity firms. They're demonizing Bain Capital. But in fact, they're taking money and they're in business and in bed with numerous other hedge funds. So to me, the hypocrisy here is blatant. And the question I have for liberal Democrats is this. It's a very simple one. Why is Romney's wealth bad, but Obama's wealth is good? Why is it when Romney is tied to Wall Street, it's bad, but when Obama's tied to Wall Street, it's good? This is what I don't understand.
It reminds me very much of communism. Look, my grandparents fled communism. My parents fled communism. My father would bring me back behind the Iron Curtain to visit his family. I've seen communism up front. They would rail against wealth. They would rail against economic inequality. And yet all of these Soviet apparatchiks, all of these communist apparatchiks, they have dachas. They live in villas. They drive Mercedes cars. They shop in separate shops. They get the best food. They have the finest furniture. They have the finest alcohol and wine. So let me get this straight. The peasants starve, but the elites live off the fat of the land. This is essentially what we're now seeing in America. You are now seeing two classes. You are seeing one privileged ruling elite, the Democons and the Republicrats, a two-party duopoly, where they are essentially rigging the game in their favor, and the middle America has to pay the bill. Let me ask all of you one simple question. Just one question. Did any of you vote for a $15.6 trillion debt? Did any of you vote for that? Have any of you ever said, yes, we want a $1.3 trillion deficit year after year after year? And this is not just Obama. This goes back to Bush. Deficit after deficit after deficit. We didn't vote for that. Did we vote to have our borders remain open? Have we voted to allow 20 million illegal immigrants to enter our country? We didn't vote for that. Did we vote for us now to be committed in Afghanistan for another 12 years until 2024? Spending billions of dollars and sacrificing God knows how many more thousands of our troops, our precious blood and treasure? We didn't vote for that. They are taking our country right away from us, right underneath our noses. This is why I've been saying this for a long time. We need a serious, real, independent conservative movement in America, no longer restrained by the political parties, no longer bought off, but that will speak for the American people in one voice. And that's why I'm a proud member of the Tea Party. This is Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
This is the Savage Nation. Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage. 1-800-449-8255. Dimitri in Houston, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, good afternoon, comrade.
Good afternoon, comrade.
I'm probably one of the most unique species. I left the former Soviet Union when I was 22, and I lived half my life there and my second half of my adult life here, and call it a deja vu. I ran from something and I end up here 22 years later with the same. You touched earlier in your analysis there, the Communist Party leaders, not only they lived in their own villas and had their own dachas, but all their kids went to schools in Switzerland, in France, in England, and all their kids that we see today in positions in Soviet Union and all the satellites, those are 45-year-old men that once upon a time their parents being part of that communist coup and that internal clique of people that what we call the communist, you know, the party, the Politburo, those are the guys that rule today Russia. And the same thing here. And once you get into that, you know, that clique of Washington elite, you criticize everything around you. You tell people what to eat, what not to eat. You condemn every industry that makes money or loses money. Everything is a problem, and you blame everything for your own failure, which ultimately makes you a psychopath. But you never look at your own self. You never.
Dimitri, comrade, listen, comrade Dimitri, you have made some superb points. What you're seeing is a new ruling class, like in the old Soviet Union, emerge here in America. And have you noticed now, we're now ruled by family dynasties.
You have the Bushes. You have the Clintons. You're now seeing it with the Obamas. You're completely right. They send their kids to the finest schools. I don't see Obama sending his two kids to public schools. They don't have to see what it's like to be in a Washington, D.C. public school. No, 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 no. Nothing but the best for his daughters. Nothing but the best for Hillary and Bill. Nothing but the best for the Bushes. Nothing but the best for the Romneys. And so what you see happening is you are seeing these cliques, these cabals, develop in Washington. It's like in the old Soviet system. You had reformers and you had hardliners. Well, you have Democrats and you have Republicans. They're like two factions of a sort of a crony capitalist socialist plutocracy. That's what you see happening. And the government now controls everything. They tell you how you can drive your car. They tell you what light bulbs you can use. They tell you where you can smoke, where you can't smoke. They're now telling you what kind of health insurance you can buy. They're telling you how much you can pay your workers and how much you can't pay your workers. They tell you which industries they nationalize, which industries they don't nationalize. They're controlling every aspect of our lives as if they're somehow indispensable. And yet when you look around you objectively, like in the old Soviet Union, what do we see? Economic failure after economic failure. We can't even protect our own borders. We can't even balance our own budgets. We can't even produce semi-functional literate students from high school. My friends, we're not even doing the basics. And these people run around patting themselves on the back, running around on The View, as if somehow, I don't know what, they're these pop celebrities, these demigods, that we should be thanking them for being in the Oval Office. And that's another thing. Have you noticed? And that's an old communist line that they use. They're not politicians. They're, quote, public servants. Have you noticed that? It's Orwellian. They're not politicians. No, 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 no. They serve the public as they're plundering, as they're enriching themselves, as they're making money off of us. No, no, they're serving us. It's a service. It's a favor. And so when they finally retire at 75 or 80 with $50 million, they come in poor and they leave $50 million richer. All this public service. I did it for the people. I did it for the people. Who pays for it? We do. All the time. Every day. That's why I'm a limited government conservative. The bigger government grows, the more power it centralizes, the more corruption spreads. That's why I think the founding fathers were geniuses. You limit power. You have separation of power. You have checks and balances. And when in doubt, make sure the people, the states and the people, have the most power. That's the only way to prevent this kind of plutocracy, this kind of slow emerging socialist dictatorship that is now emerging right in front of our very eyes. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to quickly Brian in Alabama. I got about a minute. Go, baby.
Yeah. Number one, I think we should investigate Obama. If we can investigate Roger Clemens and baseball and steroid abuse, we should investigate Obama.
Brian, you're completely right. What Obama potentially did, if Ed Klein is right, is infinitely worse than anything Roger Clemens did. This is not about taking steroids. This is about trying to bribe somebody and a misuse of campaign dollars. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times, sitting in for the living legend, Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. Michael, my buddy, if you're listening, I just want to take one last chance to thank you once again, my friend, for sitting in for you tonight. I can't tell you what a wonderful honor and opportunity it is. Go to michaelsavage.com. There are stories up there you will not and cannot find anywhere else. Trickle Down Tyranny, if you have not bought it, trust me, go out and buy it. It is one hell of a read, a superb read, really a blueprint to examining the destruction that Obama is wreaking upon America, and in many ways, the solutions to getting America back on the path towards freedom and prosperity. You know, there was a story up, a story that Michael Savage, that Michael was very fond of. And it's something that you're not hearing many conservatives, at least on talk radio, mention it. Because they don't want to upset their paymasters. They don't want to upset their allies and their cronies in the Republican National Committee and on Capitol Hill. They're in bed with the Republican establishment, and they don't want to ruffle any feathers. But there was a very good story recently in Politico, and it lays it all out there. There is now a growing rebellion among conservative rank-and-file members of Congress against House Speaker John Boehner. And have you noticed, what has Boehner been doing for the last 2 years? I go to conservative meeting after conservative meeting. I go to conservative function after conservative function. And when I'm done giving my speech or giving my talk or presentation, people automatically ask me afterwards. It's one of the questions I often get. What does John Boehner actually do? What has he done? And the answer in a nutshell is nothing. And so now many conservatives, according to this story in Politico, are now asking themselves, should Boehner be around if Obama is defeated in November 2012? Should there be a conservative challenge to John Boehner's leadership in the House of Representatives? Apparently this morning, Boehner, along with Mitch McConnell, Dirty Harry Reid, Nancy the Piranha Pelosi, went up with a meeting at the White House with Obama. He met with the bipartisan congressional leadership. And Boehner, under increasing pressure from the Tea Party movement, from the conservative grassroots, and from members of his own party, now apparently threw down the gauntlet and told Obama that if the debt ceiling is to be raised before this election, apparently now by the fall, we're going to hit up against the debt ceiling again. They're just burning money in Washington. This time, Boehner says, unlike last year, if the debt ceiling has to be raised, he wants immediate corresponding spending cuts. In fact, they even have to be bigger cuts than what the amount of the limit is going to be increased, the debt limit. Obama told him apparently at today's meeting, no go, no dice. And so now we're set on another collision course of chicken, of a game of political chicken, of brinksmanship. And yet, though, if you look on issue after issue, what has John Boehner actually done? Has he proposed an alternative to Obamacare? No. Has he proposed serious spending cuts to rein in our runaway deficits? No. And the big issue, the one that everybody's talking about on Capitol Hill among conservative lawmakers, is why has Eric Holder not been cited for contempt of Congress for ignoring the subpoena to testify about Fast and Furious? The Government Reform Committee, led by Daryl Issa, has been investigating Operation Fast and Furious. And when they demand answers from Eric Holder and from the Justice Department and to hand over sensitive information and emails showing and proving that Eric Holder knew about guns being trafficked into Mexico, guns being trafficked by the federal government towards Mexican drug cartels that then were used to murder American federal agents on American soil. Holder ignores the subpoena, has been ignoring it now for over a year, refuses to hand over vital information. This is obviously a cover-up. And there are no consequences. He's in direct contempt of Congress. And yet, Boehner is cautious. Boehner plays with the kid gloves on. Boehner refuses to aggressively go after Eric Holder and the Justice Department. He refuses to get to the bottom of what I believe is Obama's Watergate. This is the mother of all scandals. You have the American federal government, the Obama administration, illegally buying and then smuggling weapons to the Mexican drug cartels, those gangsters who are perpetrating one massacre after another, their hands soaked in blood with weapons provided by the Obama administration. And then those guns come back into the United States. And U.S. border agents are shot and murdered. Many of those guns are still unaccounted for. Many of them are in numerous American cities, being used against American civilians as we speak. There's no accountability. No one's paying the price. No one's being asked to define and explain exactly what happened, why it happened. Instead, there is silence. Eric Holder is breaking laws in this country. Eric Holder is committing numerous crimes. He is our chief law enforcement officer. Are we the United States of America? Or are we the United States of Mexico? Or the United States of Argentina? Where political officials, top government officials, can break the law, lie and cover it up, refuse to be held accountable, live above the law. Is this what the American democracy has come to? Is this what our democracy has come to? Where's John Boehner? They're livid up there on Capitol Hill. Why will Boehner not cite Eric Holder for contempt of Congress? More than that, why won't Boehner do what I have been arguing now for nearly a year? Impeach him. If Eric Holder will not enforce the laws of this country, if Eric Holder will break the laws of this country, if Eric Holder will smuggle guns to the Mexican drug cartels and then lie and commit perjury and obstruct justice and cover it up, why is he our attorney general? He should be fired immediately. And this is the problem with Republicans in the House and with Republicans on the Capitol Hill, especially top Republican leaders. They are lily-livered cowards. Obama fights back and they break. The liberal media criticizes them and they break. They break on the Bush tax cuts. They break on spending cuts. They break on building a wall along the Mexican border. They break on issue after issue after issue. Because in the end, they don't have the guts. They don't have the courage. They don't have the backbone to stand up to the liberal regime and the Obama machine. And that is the problem with Republicans on Capitol Hill. And if they want to understand why the American people are still lukewarm about voting for them in November, about voting for a guy like Mitt Romney, they have to look no further than John Boehner. Just the sight of him,
Just the sight of him. I say this guy's a joke. I've never seen a guy more obsessed with his tan than John Boehner. He spends 2 or 3 hours a day in a tanning salon. I've said this before. You know, when you sign forms, I have to sign forms at the Washington Times. They asked me, are you white? Are you African-American? Are you Hispanic? Are you Asian? Are you Pacific Islander? I mean, you have this whole, there's white, there's brown, there's black. Under Boehner, there's now orange. This guy's invented a whole new ethnicity. I've never seen this before. So look, my advice to him is a simple one. Get out of the tanning salon. Stop getting a suntan. Okay? Stop spending 2 or 3 hours a day. Worry less about your orange skin and worry more about confronting Obama. And in particular, taking it to this president, to this out-of-control criminal gangster regime. And you can start with Operation Fast and Furious and ask this question. What did Eric Holder know about illegal gun smuggling to Mexican drug cartels? And more than that, nobody's going to tell me that an operation of this size and this scope, that the president didn't know about it. What did the president know and when did he know it? If he did that, if he pushed for a real investigation and had a contempt citation, contempt of Congress, and pushed for impeachment against Eric Holder, then I'd say, you know what? Boehner's got some spine. Boehner's got some stomach. And so the question I have for you is a simple one. Are you disappointed in John Boehner's leadership? Do you think Republicans after November, if they retain the majority in the House, should replace him with another person to be Speaker? And look, it's now been a while since we've had the November 2010 elections. It's now been about 18 months. Are you happy with the performance of House Republicans? Do you feel the Tea Party has had its issues addressed? Or do you feel we've been betrayed? Are you happy with John Boehner's leadership? Or do you think it's time for him to go? 1-800-449-8255. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Our positions in government are ones of trust. And in rebuilding that trust between the American people and their elected representatives is an important component in our system of government. And if we're going to succeed, we've got to rebuild that trust and show the American people that we're worthy of that trust and that we do the right thing every day.
Yeah. What are you doing every day? Forget doing the right thing every day. What do you do every day except getting a suntan, Mr. House Speaker? This is Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Is it time for John Boehner to go? I want to hear from you. Robert in Virginia, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, it's time to get rid of him. I want a fighter, not a crier. I want someone who's going to represent us. I'm tired of it. I'm tired of all of them. We get him
Robert,
in office.
Robert, let me ask you this, because you make a very good point about him crying all the time. He's always tearing up. Do you think, really, here is a guy who's supposed to be Obama's chief adversary. Okay, he's the guy that's supposed to go show, you know, toe-to-toe, mano-a-mano with Obama on issue after issue. And yet, every time I see him in public, he's bawling his eyes out. Don't you think that sends a signal of weakness to people on Capitol Hill and across the country? Or is it just me, Robert?
It's we all get the message, and we need he's a nice guy, but you know, we need someone strong with a backbone who's going to galvanize the rest of the conservatives and move forward.
No, I'm with you. Amen, Robert. I couldn't agree more. I think this guy's been a big zero, a colossal failure, and I think come November, I think he's gone. I think conservatives should purge him, and the sooner the better. Jimmy in Texas, thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'd like Obama to be gone, and I'd like John Boehner to be gone. Replace him with somebody with a backbone.
Jimmy, what do you think of Mitch McConnell on the Senate side? Wouldn't it be nice to get rid of all three of them?
I have no opinion yet.
I mean, Jimmy, I would go for a clean sweep. We get rid of Obama. We get rid of Boehner. We get rid of Mitch McConnell. Clean house completely. And get some serious, principled conservative leadership. Teresa in Albany, you're on the Savage Nation.
Jeff, I'll be quick. I just wanted to thank you and Michael for your courage in these times when good is bad and bad is good and up is down and down is up. But what I wanted to say was, in the Beltway, I just have a feeling that a lot of these guys have something on the other guy. So it's sort of like they're hanging something over their head. And even without that being involved, the media will just isolate and destroy somebody who speaks out and use the Alinsky method.
Teresa, you are so right. I don't think you realize how right you are. The game in Washington is this. Everybody knows what's in everybody else's skeleton. Closet. The skeleton's in their closet. And that's why people are reluctant to confront one another. Because I'm telling you, trust me, Boehner has some skeletons in his closet. And he's afraid that Obama and his people will leak to the liberal media. And that's why he's a coward. Jeff Kuhner, sitting in for Michael Savage.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Kuhner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage, 1-800-449-8255. You look across the Atlantic. Greece is now literally on the verge of bankruptcy. The Eurozone is no longer lending their banks any money. There's now a run on the banks. Just today, nearly million dollars was taken out by Greek creditors. The Greeks are now going to the banks and taking out their money. They are now, they're desperate. They know their currency is going to be worthless. They know the country is going right down the tubes. They're going to be bought and paid for by the international creditors and by the World Bank and by the United Nations. And so now, the Greek economy is collapsing. Portugal is collapsing. Spain is collapsing. The Eurozone is collapsing. They're going to kick Greece out of the EU and out of the Euro. And that will be our fate in 2 to 5 years. This is what's at stake. Don't even take my word for it. Here is Senator Tom Coburn, one of the few principled conservatives in the Senate, Oklahoma Republican, giving a recent interview saying, you know what? We're going to hit a major financial meltdown. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when. Boys, roll clip 9.
How long do you think the United States has before a financial meltdown, so to
speak? 2 to 5 years. 2 to 5 years. Remember, think about what will happen to us. We have $16 trillion worth of debt right now, and we're paying less than 2% on that debt. That's 4 percentage points less than our historical average for our debt. Interest rates are going to come back up. We're not going to be able to borrow money at 0.25% or 2% overall on our debt, because people are going to quit loaning us money because we continue to build up an unsustainable debt.
He nailed it. We have a debt crisis. We are spending way beyond our means. And this is what the Greeks did. This is what the Italians did. This is what the Irish did. This is what the Spaniards did. This is what the French are doing. And this is unsustainable. In the end, they call in your loans. I'm sorry, we're not going to lend you any more money. It's time to pay up. Oh, you don't want to pay up? Now we're going to raise your interest rates on your debt. And then before you know it, you're Greece. And so now, Coburn says, we really have about 10 years. We have a literally one last final window to rein in spending, reform entitlements, and start balancing our books, or else it's over. Boys, roll clip 10.
In 2022, less than 10 years from now, unless we make major changes that everybody's saying they know has to be made, but none of the politicians have the courage to make, the entire federal budget will be made of only three things: interest, Medicare, and Social Security. Nothing else. There'll be no Defense Department. There'll be no Department of Energy, no Department of Education. Nothing. There will be nothing except those three things. That's in 10 years.
Interest. Basically, the George Soroses of this world are going to line their pockets. Medicare and Social Security. Nothing else will be able to be paid for in the budget in less than 10 years. Now, you think about that. You're an Islamo-fascist. You're some radical jihadist. You got to wait 10 years. We won't have a military. We won't be able to even pay to defend ourselves. We're finished. We will be a crippled, broken, bankrupt superpower. We will be England like they were after World War II. Nothing. A shadow of our former self. So now, go back to November 2010. What did we elect John Boehner to do? What did we elect the Republican House conservatives to do? To clean house, cut spending, reform entitlements, balance the books. And again, I have to ask this question. Facing this debt bomb, as Coburn completely and accurately describes it, we're 2 to 5 years away from a major catastrophe, from a major crisis. When the bill will be due, where is John Boehner? And is it time for the orange man to go? 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Dave in Texas. Thanks for holding. You're on the Savage Nation.
Hey, I wanted to comment on the Speaker of the House situation. And by analogy, here in Texas, we have a Speaker of the House that's also ineffective and actually side of the Democrats. And the point I wanted to make, I told your screener, is that in addition to elections of good people, the citizens and those people that we elect and hope are on our side have got to pay attention to the rules of the House of Representatives. That's the key case here in Texas, because the committee chairs are bottling up legislation on illegal aliens that ought to be passed, but it never gets a hearing in the committee, therefore never makes it to the floor. And so, that's all I'm going to say is, folks, pay attention to the rules. Download them. They're available on the websites of the government. And then go and educate yourself and educate all those people that are sitting in the state and federal legislature, and make them follow the rules to their advantage, not just to the advantage of the bad guys.
No, you make a very good point, Dave, that, look, constitutionality is key here. And we have to understand how the House of Representatives works, how the Senate works, how the Congress works. But look, this again, look, I understand Boehner isn't the answer. You eliminate Boehner, not everything is going to be right and good. I understand that. It's not just one man that makes Congress ticks. But look, he is Speaker of the House. He's third in line to the succession, to the presidency. If the president passes away, you have the vice president. After the vice president, it's the House Speaker. So he's basically the third most powerful man in America. Now, why doesn't Boehner start cracking some heads and saying, you know what? I want to see some real spending cuts, and I want votes. I want to show me a bill that really reforms Medicare. Pass it. The Democrats kill it in the Senate. I don't care. I want to humiliate the Democrats. I want to show to America we have viable alternatives to what Obama and the Democrats are doing. That's what we sent them to Capitol Hill to do. I didn't send him to eat hoagie sandwiches with Obama as he did today to stuff his face and go on about how good the sandwiches were. I didn't send him up there to taste the cuisine in Washington. I sent him up there to block and challenge and take it to Obama. And so far, he's not doing it. Now, if he won't do it, let's find somebody else who can. But that's just me. Richard in Sacramento. You're on the Savage Nation. Go, baby.
Jeff, first-time caller here. I can't tell you how many times I've every day I'm glued to 650 here. I listen to Michael Savage, and I just appreciate you guys. You're our voices. I've tried time and time to get in, but here's my take on John Boehner. I consider myself a conservative, a true American patriot. There's millions of us out there. You're our voice. I lost respect for John Boehner the day or the night that I witnessed on television his swearing in when he cried all the way down the aisle. He got his composure and cried again. He's a crybaby, okay? The other thing that I was appalled with is that grassroots Tea Party movement. If it wasn't for us, we wouldn't have taken those 63 seats over in the Congress. John Boehner wouldn't have had the opportunity. And not one time in his swearing in, Jeff, did he reach out to the and make mention to the Tea Party, the conservatives that got him there, to say thank you. And the reason being is real clear. As Michael has talked about it many times, he's an oligarch. He's he's with the Republican committee, and they've been fighting since day one. There's a separation there, and all I can say is these true American patriots that are going forward and taking over Senate seats in the Congress, we need to get these crybabies out. We need to stand for something, and Boehner's not the guy. He needs to get out of there, Jeff.
Richard, you hit the nail right on the head. He's an ingrate. He's an oligarch. He's an establishment hack, and he owes his job. He owes his current powerful position to people like you and the Tea Party. And I don't think he quite understands what the Tea Party is all about. In fact, I know he doesn't understand what the Tea Party is all about. You know what he sees you guys as? You know what he sees us as? As a problem to manage. Those are the radical far-right fringes that he's got to... We don't want to alienate him because we need him to get elected, but, you know, we don't want to give him too much. And you're right. When he was bawling his eyes out, that boy dip into the supposed to get in front of the cameras. I mean, I'm looking at him. I go, this is pathetic. But I'll tell you where I lost respect for him. You make some very good points. He should have mentioned the Tea Party. He should have mentioned grassroots conservatives because they were the ones that propelled the Republicans to power and 60 seats in November 2010. But I lost respect for him when he caved to Obama on the debt ceiling increase last summer. Now he's Mr. Tough Guy. Now he says he's going to face down Obama. I'll believe it when I see it. But last year, he should have said, you know what, Mr. President, you want to play politics? Let's play politics. I'm going to go to the American people the way Tom Coburn, the clips that we just played 5 minutes ago, and I'm going to explain to them that we will be Greece in 2 years. And if we continue in 10 years, we will only have money for interest, Social Security, and Medicare. That's it. No agriculture, no education, no military, no nothing. Now, Mr. President, we're going to cut, we're going to balance, and we're going to cap. That's what we're going to do. We're going to cut spending, we're going to cap spending, and then we're going to pass a balanced budget amendment, forcing Congress to balance their books. Now, if he did that, he would have gotten the majority of the American people behind him. He would have been a true patriot. He would have been a lion of the conservative movement. And I believe he would have broken Obama's back right there. It would have been over. Good night, Irene. Instead, the crybaby cried and went back home. That's all he did. He capitulated and cried as he went to the tanning salon to get his little suntan. That's all. He's crying in his little tanning salon. That's what he did. Brandon in Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Jeff, thanks for taking my call. I've been listening for about 10 years to Dr. Savage, maybe a little bit more. I'm 30, so I'm rather young, and the Tea Party movement is rather active where I'm at. But I got to tell you, Boehner, man, he's not worth the paper he's written on. A lot of the points a couple of your callers have already made while I've been on hold about him being a wine bag and a crybaby, and that's fine, great, and wonderful. But the fact of the matter is, we as American citizens are the one that need to step up and do our job. And I think the Tea Party's done that. But you get a lot of other people saying that that's not necessarily the case. Dr. Savage has said many a times that, you know, if we want to change something, we're the ones that are going to have to stand up. It's our vote that matters, okay? We are the ones that elect these idiots in the power. When Chet Edwards was here locally, which is Nancy Pelosi's lapdog, and Chet was in office for 18 years and had a major, major play in the Veterans Affairs Hospital here. Now, I got to tell you, being former military and everything in between, I supported him about the first 8 years. After all the fun stuff was over with and the love went away like a marriage, I got to tell you, things started to get a little bit irate. And I can't believe it took as long as it did to get him out of office. But for him to be vetted for VP was an absolute slap in the face. I live 7 miles from the former president. My world was turned upside down. I can't tell you how many times.
Oh, and Brandon, look, I got to tell you, look, here's what people don't understand. The key to many journalists is that the city runs on access. You can't do anything without having access to either the House Minority Leader or the House Speaker or the Senate Majority Leader or the Senate Minority Leader. They know where the bills are. They even know what's wrong with a lot of the bills. They know a lot of the scandals. They know a lot of the hidden perks. They know a lot of where the earmarks are. So journalists rely upon access. And many journalists in this city, especially conservative journalists, there aren't many, but there are some. Let me tell you, I know this for a fact. Everything goes through Boehner's office. And so if you criticize Boehner in any way, shape, or form, he will not speak to you, his people will not speak to you, and you will not have access. And then your editors will be on your back saying, well, hold on, why aren't you breaking these stories? Why is our competition scooping us on story after story? And that's how the game is played. Everybody has dirt on everybody else. And that's why nobody wants to pull the trigger. That's why nobody's confrontational. That's why nobody will really take it to one another, because they know it's mutual assured destruction. And that's why I say, clean the bums out. Kick the bums out and clean house. In both parties, we want our country back, and we want it now. Jeff Cooner, sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Welcome back to the Savage Nation. This is Jeff Cooner from the Washington Times sitting in for Michael Savage. If you want to read any of my columns in the Washington Times, just punch in my last name, K-U-H-N-E-R. Go to WashingtonTimes.com. You know, people often ask me, what is life like in Washington, D.C.? Covering this cesspool, covering politics on a day-to-day basis, covering all of this corruption. Let me be very candid with all of you. We've been talking about Reverend Jeremiah Wright today, how he basically told Ed Klein in his upcoming book on tape that he was offered $150,000 by Obama and by his election team, basically for his silence in the 2008 campaign. We've been talking about Obama now being worth at least $10 million and his ties to J.P. Morgan Chase. We've been talking about John Boehner and why he remains a formidable force in Washington, D.C., even though his leadership has been utterly incompetent and inept. The problem in Washington is that the cesspool is so deep, it compromises and infiltrates both parties. And so the way the game works is this. Everybody has dirt on the other person. People in Washington know about Obama's background. They know about his ties to Reverend Wright. They know about his Islamic background. They know about a lot of the corruption that goes all the way to Chicago. So why don't they expose it? Because Obama and his people have information that is damaging about Republicans. And that's why many Americans keep asking me, why are the Republicans constantly holding back? Why? Because the answer is, to be brutally honest, many Republicans are morally compromised themselves. And so it's a game of essentially two parties holding guns to each other's heads. And they're saying, you want to pull the trigger? Go ahead. I'll blow your brains out as well. And so there is a complicity of silence, a complicity of corruption, a complicity of thieves. And this is why our problems keep getting bigger and bigger. This is why we don't cut spending. This is why we don't rein in the influence of lobbyists and the influence of money and the influence of Wall Street and the influence of all these special interests that are bleeding our country white. And this is why the only answer to America's problems is to eliminate and destroy the political class, to return power to the people, to you. Because, my friends, if you leave it to them, believe me, we will be Greece in less than 5 years. Ask the Greeks what the politicians have done for them. And that's the same thing that's going to happen to us. Greece's fate is our fate unless we kick the bums out. Jeff Cooner sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Savage.